welcome to the Monkeys Fighting Robots podcast with Matthew Sardo.
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
Holy sh! They're actually monkeys fighting robots!
You can follow us on Twitter at monkeys_robots and on Instagram at monkeys fighting robots. Make sure to download and review our podcast from iTunes and Stitcher. And now, here's your host, Matt.
Welcome to the 107th episode of Monkeys Fighting Robots. Today's episode is going to be crazy. EJ and I are talking about M. Night Shyamalan's Split. And on the second half of the show, movie critic Dewey Singleton and I interview Ice Cube. And then we close out the show with a conversation with Sean Astin about his new documentary. I'm your host, Matthew Sardo. I'm also the co-founder of MonkeysFightingRobots.com. Joining me in the banter is my co-host, movie critic EJ Marino.
Our mini hiatus is done, Matt. We are back in charge. We're going to finish this podcast today and get some awesome dialogue started about this awesome movie.
Well, for our listeners, if you were wondering where our podcast was last week, I went down the rabbit hole of rebuilding the website from scratch. It was one of those things where I was like, oh, I got a little bit of time. My wife is off from work for a little bit. I was like, I'll just dabble a little bit in rebuilding, and then I'll get back to the podcast. And then I was like, oh. Then I went with a full-blown remodel.
Yeah, you completely gutted the website and then made something different. It's awesome. I love the new redesign. But it was like, oh, I guess Matt got consumed by his work. Oh, boy.
Well, once I realized that we could do more things with galleries and we can... And I there was abilities on this new format that we have to where we can do more comic book stuff as well. And then just when new images are released, I was like, okay, we got to add that. And then the way the video gallery is set up. And there's a lot of functionality of this new website that I was just like nerded out over. And it's hilarious because my dad is like, why don't you design websites for a living? And I was like, it's one of my side projects I really like to do. But I mean, like, I guess that could be a fallback plan. I mean, so I guess if you want a WordPress website that's fucking awesome, just give me a holler.
Just add that to your long list of resume stuff, like comic book shop owner, radio host. Now I do website design on the side.
Well, you know, I also do real estate photography on the side now, and my realtor is like, hey, can you do videos? So now I think I get paid to make films, short films, and I get paid to be a photographer, so... I'm entering this whole new realm of crazy shenanigans that we do right now. But I just want to work with one realtor. I mean, unless you want to pay me a lot of money to shoot your house. I mean, because just one guy is good. Because it's like, you get to know him. He's like, hey, I want you to shoot the house. All right, it's fine. And you have a conversation and it's done. But once you know what I realize is this is the realtor that sold me my house. And there's a reason why we picked him as our realtor. Because he's not an asshole. Other realtors are assholes, straight up assholes. And I've shot a few other realtors' houses. I was like, oh man, they're like really annoying. Like there's a reason why this guy's the guy I deal with because he's the least annoying realtor I've ever met. So if you need a realtor in St. Petersburg, Florida, I have a recommendation for you, I guess. I mean, all those St. Pete listeners that we have out there. You know, but I'm sure that James, if you're in China, would sell you property as well. So, I mean, we'll work it out. We'll work it out.
I think our realtor demographic just slipped down a little bit there by calling them all annoying and crazy. But hey, at least we got one that loves us.
Okay. Well, you know, I can go into a sidebar of consulting for realtors to be less assholes. You know, that could be my next job. Be like, oh, hey.
Just add more to that resume.
The resume is like, hey, realtors, I have a course in how not to be a douchebag to the people that want to spend a shit ton of money.
God, I actually feel like that would be helpful.
EJ, how you been?
I've been good. It's that little week off kind of helped with, you know, just kind of regrouping. I saw some movies last week. I saw The Bye Bye Man. Horrible, but I kind of laughed. It's so bad it's good, but not good enough. So it was pretty good. I got to catch up on movies, catch up on TV. It's been pretty good. I'm really excited to talk about this, though. I've been waiting for this for a while, and Split seemed like it was going to be the movie and kind of the movie I really wanted to see, and this is my first favorite movie of the year so far.
Yeah, we're like 2 weeks in. It's fine. But no, January and February are my favorite times of year for films because this is when bad sci-fi films or bad horror films or bad, like, nerdy films come out, and I just suck it all up. Like, we got a Resident Evil coming out. There was an Underworld film that came out. Like, this is my prime time of, like, I'm going to a theater. My friends are like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm seeing bad cinema, and I love it. I love it so much.
Yeah, I love that they dump trash in these, like, first 2 months of the year. But I, like you said, I suck it all up.
But it's my kind of trash. Like, it's my... Yeah. There was crazy, like, Legion movie, like, 5 years ago where some angel fell down to Earth. And there was, I think, like, not Randy Quaid, because he's crazy, but Dennis Quaid was in it. And it was, like, a small gas station in the middle of the Dust Bowl, and this angel had to defend it from all the demons and other angels. And I was like, oh, I was like, this has everything I love. And then it was, like, bad CGI. It was a horrible film, but I still enjoyed it because it's January and February, and those are the times when you see these crazy films.
No, these are super schlocky, super kind of over the top. And I think that's what works is then we get to like the middle of the year. And those are when just bad movies come out. Not even the fun bad, just the bad stuff. So I'll take the beginning of the year fun trash over anything else this year.
And it's also funny because it's also the same time that we're praising the best pictures from 2016 with the Oscars and the Golden Globes. And like they're like all this praise for like La La Land, yay! And then it's like... Underworld promos are going on during like Golden. So it's this juxtaposition of bad sci-fi and like the best films of the year. I love this time of year. It's my favorite time. And I had some friends in Chicago, Dennis and I, we would go get some ribs over at Fat Willie's in Chicago and we would go see bad films. And I enjoyed it a lot.
I definitely agree that this is the odd time of the year because like all the Golden Globes, all the Oscar stuff, but these are my type of movies. Like, I'll let Manchester by the Sea and La La Land have all their shine. I'll suck up all this Split talk right now or XXX that's coming out this week. All these super campy movies, please, I'll take them any day over anything else.
I always feel like it's a missed opportunity, and we just had it, and it was a missed opportunity when there isn't a really good horror film that comes out on Friday the 13th.
Yeah, it's always kind of this, like, mediocre one. I remember even a couple, like, not even a couple years ago, a long time, The Omen came out on 666, and I was just like, ooh, good time, bad movie. It's just like, we have these dates sometimes that could be better, but, yeah, they missed out on opportunity.
But sometimes, like, that, like, with, like, the 666, like, you're going, like, oh, shit, like, I'm actually fucking going to tempt fate by going to see The Omen on 666. Like, it's going to be the best ever. So you get hyped up for the film. So you enjoy yourself before you even watch the film. And the same thing with like Friday the 13th, like, oh my God, it's Friday the 13th. And I'm going to go to a theater and see some scary shit. Like there's going to be some scary shit going on. And like, you're already scared before you even get to the theater and like you get amped for it.
Yeah. Split definitely should have been the Friday the 13th movie this month. I really think that would have really gave it a good backing if everyone was looking for a film like this. And I really hope like the next Friday 13th at the end of the year is much better because hopefully we're getting a new Jason movie. So that's all I want.
And you mentioned Split. So is this where I should probably stop my like rant and rave about everything else besides Split? Should we actually talk about the film now? Do we want to?
Call people up now.
Because after our Golden Globes insanity of an episode, if you haven't listened to it, we had three movie critics plus us on the air. It was interesting to pull that together, to get everybody with microphones and get everybody from all over the country or all over Florida. And then Larry, who is in, I want to say he's always in Arkansas, but he's not in Arkansas. I don't think he's in Arkansas. Yeah, I think he might be from Arkansas. He's not in Alabama. I think he's in Arkansas. I can't believe Larry's from Arkansas.
It doesn't seem like it. He's not as backwards as most Arkansas people are.
But that was crazy. And then to edit it, because somebody kept sniffing the whole time.
That is probably super annoying.
Podcast etiquette 101. Stop sniffing. Like, what is that? What is what's going on there? I can't even
do it. Just had to smell the bullshit that was coming out from that podcast.
I don't even know where we're. This is it. This is the break right here. This is where we're going to actually talk about Split right now. We're going to do it. We're going to do it. I promise we're going to do it. Let's talk about Split. But before we talk about Split, let's establish our relationship with M. Night Shyamalan.
how do we define this? This is like, if me and him were in a relationship on Facebook, it's complicated. Like, I don't know how else to say it, but I like him, but then I don't like him, and then I love him, and I hate him. He's a very interesting director.
I've always enjoyed what he tries to do. I, like you, defend Zack Snyder. I am an M. Night Shyamalan defender. Because I think that he is at least trying to be creative and push the medium forward in storytelling. I feel like he's at least trying to. Whether he achieves it or not, that's to be interpreted. And there are several films that are like, I don't really understand. But the token thing is he's always swinging for the fences. Sometimes he hits a home run. Sometimes he strikes out. But he's at least trying to hit the ball as far as possible. And that's what I respect about him. And that's why I will gladly go see his films and give the money and give him a chance. Because with Split, I was taken back as soon as the film started because of the font he used to introduce the film. And then the trippy layering he did with the opening credits. I was like, oh my God, this is a nice 70s indie film. I can't wait to see where we're going to go with this one. And I was in the mood. He put me in the mood right as soon as the credits start, opening credits started.
Yeah, he's a super niche director. He's very, like you said, he knows what he's doing, and he does swing for the fences. He's a pure artist. I will always respect that. Even at his very worst with something like Avatar The Last Airbender or Lady in the Water or even After Earth, I still applaud what he is doing there. He's still doing something, and like you said, pushing the whole industry further. Even if it's bad, they're still pushing there. Where there's people who make good movies but just make good movies and do nothing else. So I will always respect him for that. And now with Split, I think he's starting to gain back the general public's feeling as well.
It'll be interesting to see how this plays out with the general public. Because I was at Comic-Con, I forgot how long it was. It was a while ago. But one of his films came through on it as a trailer, and he just got booed by the nerds. And I was like, oh man, I was like, come on guys. Like, I understand that you knock it out of the park with Sixth Sense. Unbreakable, nobody got in 2000. I came out of the theater and people hated it. And I was like, oh my God, this is one of the best comic book movies ever. This is what I love as a comic book fan. But like, the general public was not ready for the Marvel Cinematic Universe at that point in time. And they were like, I don't really get it. And then Signs is where I was like, I know you're trying to always do this twist thing now. And then The Village is where it's like, okay, we started looking for that twist. And then you're like, oh, it's not really in this time. But it's still up to the twist. I'm like, ooh, this is really good. This is interesting. And you know, Adrian Brody back then. You know, I mean, like, there was a lot of really good actors. He always gets good actors. And then The Lady in the Water, people loathe. But I was like, this is live action D&D. It's the best thing ever. Woo! And that's when my, like, M. Night Shyamalan defender came in. And then The Happening. I never saw The Last Airbender because I love the cartoon. And I saw what they were doing with the film. And I was like, yeah, you guys, I'm not gonna give you guys money on that. And I don't. That's where somebody was trying to get a big name director to do a film. So I don't call that an M. Night Shyamalan film.
No, he just got kind of placed into that movie. I don't think that was a pure choice. Because, like, if you notice, he writes and directs all his films. These are all mostly original concepts. And then he gets the Avatar The Last Airbender. And you could just tell it felt so hollow compared to the rest.
Yeah,
and Devil. I will say, like, with The Happening real quick, is everyone hates that movie. And I will say, out of his quote-unquote bad movies, that's, I think, with the most fun. It feels like a Sci-Fi Channel movie that slipped through the cracks and got released to the theaters. I love that movie. I think it's so bad, but it's so good. So that's why I think he shines the most in that aspect, too, is once he admits his B-moviness, he's the best at it.
Devil was the movie that he didn't direct it, he wrote it. Was the movie that got booed as soon as they found out it was an M. Night Shyamalan film. But I like that movie because it was like, you're stuck in an elevator with the devil. Who is it? We don't know. Like, he comes up with these amazing concepts. And I'm like, ah, even Wayward Pines, like the TV show that he wrote and directed the first episode. I was like, oh my God, this is a cool concept. And then The Visit was where I was like, oh, apparently M. Night has lost all his good credit in the movie industry and he has to make a low budget film to earn back his street cred. And I was like, it was the funniest horror movie I've ever seen. And I wouldn't even consider it kind of a horror movie, but there was still a twist. But that little kid that rapped, the little redhead kid that rapped, like, I where does he find these characters? And that's what I think I enjoy the most is M. Night pulls characters out of, like, nowhere.
Yeah, he's a concept character genius. I don't think anyone really – I distinctly remember Mel Gibson's character from Signs. Something kind of just like a throwaway role, but so distinct and so memorable. Even at, like, a lower-level character like that, still super interesting. I always respect him for that. And now with Split, he gets to play with 23, 24 different characters and one human. Oh, man. Like, that was – I think this was him just kind of showing us how good he is after, like you said, he had to earn people back with The Visit and like, here, I'm going to make a movie for $6 million and make a bunch of money back. Awesome stuff. Really cool stuff there. So I'm glad this is like slowly going up and now Split, it's like, I'm back kicking the door open. I loved it.
What's most amazing about this film is James McAvoy. Like, it's just, I mean, it's
100%. He is the best thing. And this movie's around him's not bad, but it's a James McAvoy like showcase.
I like him, but I was interested to see the range that they would go with characters with him in this because it's, was it 23 personalities, and then there's a mystery personality that's going to show up at the end. And just the transformation of the different characters, I think, what do we see, 6 or 7 characters?
I think there was like 4 or 5 that were fully realized. And then there was moments that we kind of saw some of the other ones, and there were some clips shown of the other ones. But I think there was about 5 really, really, like, there was Dennis, Hedwig, Patricia, Barry, and then kind of his character, Kevin, which is kind of the main, like him before with all these split personalities. So there was some variation.
And we saw Jade. Like, yes. There was a video of her and she came out for a second. And Orwell was like the historian guy.
Yes, Orwell was really interesting. That was another one that I'm like, we caught him, saw him quickly in a video clip. And I'm like, ooh, where was him in this movie? He would have done very well.
Even the details in that looked like his mustache was gray and he had gray hair. Like, Orwell was an older person. Like, there was physical transformations for each character that were just, and that was the concept that they were going for. And like, M. Night's going for this full blown, like, what does this dissociative psychological happening, like, can you manifest physically? Like, can your mental state like go to this next level? And is the split personality that gateway into that next level of the brain? And it even made you want to, like, research this shit afterwards.
I was really into the science behind this, knowing if this, could this actually happen. And I think that was a lot of the kind of the negatives going into this movie is people thought it was going to put a more stigma on mental illness and kind of shame anyone with dissociative identity disorder. And I don't think that did this at all. I think this was a very powerful movie and really got, to me, interested in these cases and not kind of a more of a respect for them. And it was very interesting that that's what the psychiatrist character was doing as well. She was kind of our kind of being like, look, there is no stigma. There's no shame. Let them be who they are living in this body. I was so happy of seeing like the negative there and all the science research. God, it was so really cool to like so much to digest in this.
Hopefully it's not all full of shit.
No, even if it is, even if he made all of this up, I still think he handled it with some respect.
I enjoyed Betty Buckley's performance as a psychologist. Like, it was, again, like, this is what M. Night does well. Like, she's a lonely old lady. She's focused. There's so many different details in her office, like, where you can pick up personalities. Where, like, I was having a conversation with Dewey after the film, and I saw so much more depth in the film because I was just looking at everything that was going on and, like, how he sets up a set. What's in the background, what's playing on the computer, you know, how are their nails going? And I saw all this extra stuff, which added this next level of shit for me, for the film that I enjoyed. And Dewey was kind of just talking about the plot and what people were saying and all these other things. And he didn't like the film, which is fine. Everybody's got their own opinions about it. But again, the opening credit scene just reset my brain into this next level of thinking about the film. And I don't think I'm smarter than anybody else, but I just, you got to do it. Sometimes it's a couple glasses of scotch to get me into the right mindset to watch a film. Sometimes it's, you know, a nice steak or a bag of potato chips and some Twizzlers or Cherry Coke or whatever it is. But like, if you as a viewer can get into the best state possible to enjoy your film, that's what you need to do. Like, it just, you know, even if it's like you're having a shitty day and stuff like that, just take a 2-second breather and be like, I really want to enjoy this film. And like, just take a deep breath and just get into a good state. Because again, we want to enjoy these films. We don't want to hate them.
Yeah, I don't understand the critics that want to go in hating most movies. And like, that's why I do try to defend a lot of these like voiceless films sometimes that kind of need it. But to me, this film does not need any defending. I think it shows it all in itself. To me, what really like grabbed me was the cinematography from the get-go. There was this like slow pan shot that I was just like, oh, we're doing it. We're going for something over the top. And then what kept engrossing me was James McAvoy. Like, I know we talked about him a little bit before, but like you said, there's subtle changes, like going from Patricia to Hedwig. There's like a switch in his face. His face would drop or it'd get a little tighter. Just little things like that just was like, this is good. This is M. Night, honestly, I think, directing some of the best he's ever directed.
And with McAvoy, it wasn't like he was changing makeup when he was changing these characters. It was all physical. Like, I don't know how he is able to pump up his veins in his forehead or his neck. Like, how do you physically, like, I'm sure I could research that and maybe, you know, come back to you next week and be like, oh, hey, if you want to change your physical appearance, this is how you do it. But going from Hedwig, who was a 9-year-old kid, to a very strong OCD.
Like an enforcer, too. Yeah, I think Dennis was like an enforcer.
Like, his veins would pop in his forehead, and it was a quick transformation. And I know this is movie magic, and they might have had multiple takes and changed things up, and you know, McAvoy might have run laps to get everything all juiced up and stuff like that. But, like, it looked well, and it looked really good in the cinema when they just transferred personalities. Like, you saw that, and, like, you're like, oh, he's no longer Hedwig. He's Dennis now, or he's Patricia. Like, the viewers could see who they were, and it was very obvious who they were. And the other thing is, we know all their names.
Yeah, that was something that I didn't walk away thinking I would kind of grasp and fall in love with all of these people. And they're all so distinct and so memorable. Like Barry, this kind of eccentric fashion designer that I thought was so interesting, and how different Barry and Dennis were. And there was kind of a little plot thing where maybe Dennis is trying to take over Barry to make things look better. And there's a lot of layers to his performance. And I will say, you know, I know you said there's a lot of movie magic with the transformations, but there was that scene between from going from Barry to Dennis where there was no cuts and he physically changed. His eyes kind of shifted and the way his posture was. Yeah, there was a lot of stuff in camera without cuts, without anything, that James McAvoy did to transform. And I just, mind blowing. I've always thought he was a good actor, but this was the first time I was like, oh, you were incredible. Like, Pat, like, playing Professor X does not do you any favors, because this is the piece that I will remember him for now.
And I don't really want to ruin the film for you, so this is spoiler territory right here, so you might want to just pause it until you see the film. Or if you're not going to see the film, we're going to spoil it. I'm going to try not to spoil it, but like, it's hard to talk about James McAvoy's character without talking about how the film ends a little bit. And I want to talk about that because it's some of the best parts of the film. So if you haven't seen the film and you want to like hold it together, this is spoiler territory. So pause and come back to us in a couple days. What I really enjoyed, and there's conversations about this film not having enough tension, and you kind of saw that as well. But for me, at the end, where James McAvoy is going through multiple characters very quickly, I was like, oh my God, this is the most intense stuff ever. You know, like grabbing the girl on the shoulders and looking at her and just like talking to her and like seeing her emotionally break down as this guy's emotionally breaking down, going through 5 to 6 different personalities. I was like, this is amazing. And for me, it was tense. And then at the end, when he is the ultimate character at that point in time, where he is just breathing and seething and just angry and yelling, and like that intensity in his eyes and the craziness, like that's like shining Jack Nicholas-esque at that point in time right there, where I'm just like, James is bringing it really hard to this film. And then cinematically at the end of the film, where he's looking in the mirror and the mirror is just panning back and forth from James McAvoy's character back and forth in the mirror, and they're just bouncing through characters, and in the mirror they're bouncing through characters as well. So it's just it's an amazing transition, and for me that's what makes this film amazing, is just that crazy personality villain that they've created, and I want to see more of it.
I know I kind of do, and it's going to be in my review, and I've said it before, I don't think there's a crazy amount of tension. It's more of throughout the film. I felt like the entire situation is a very tense situation, but there wasn't a lot of filmmaking tension. But like you said, until he starts shifting personalities, or once this final like personality starts coming out more and getting stronger, that's when I was just like, oh, good. I'm glad we saved all the tension for this, because that was really, really kind of rough to watch. Like, there was a moment where he's like spitting and there's blood coming out of his mouth and his eyes are darker. And I feel like that was kind of one of the only physical things they really did change, was his eyes seemed almost black at that moment. I was like, this is terrifying. This is why this film gets the horror film label, because of how scary this is. And yeah, there was a lot of things at the end, like you said, where they're panning between different personalities, that there's a lot to grasp with this character, and it goes through from beginning to end. And I know you kind of said this was a spoiler, but I don't feel like this movie has a giant twist or a massive spoiler to it. I think it's pretty straightforward, which is rare for him.
And I've been trying to think of like films to kind of compare it to, because this tension thing, I was just trying to feel like 10 Cloverfield Lane kind of cinematically, visually had the same kind of concept to it. And I remember when that gunshot, when John Goodman shoots the guy, like the theater was like, holy shit. And then it was just like a silence to it. Like, for me, that was the ultimate tension craziness in there. And there wasn't that scene in this film, but that's where I don't think M. Night Shyamalan has that certain strong suit on it. Like, we talked about it. You talked about it being an R-rated horror film. They could have gone way farther with this film. They could have made it terrifying.
Yeah, I definitely wish they would have used that R rating, because I believe it is R. I don't think it's PG-13, and it definitely could have been. I mean, they showed a tiny bit of gore, and the tension was there, the language was kind of there, but I was just upset with how far they could have pushed it. And that's a compliment on the film for having enough for me to see that there was more in there. And look, I'm just happy that I didn't walk away being like, oh, I saw it and it's done. I will think about this for days and weeks to come, and I'm happy about that.
Looking at IMDb, they have it listed as a PG-13 film. And so I guess, I don't know, I still feel like you could pull off more in a PG-13 film as well.
Yeah, and I definitely feel that way as well. And I was kind of upset that I didn't see it pushed harder, because I know it's there. But I will say that at least that PG-13 is going to get more people into the theater and will hopefully make this a little bit more money, because I really think it deserves it. I think this is going to be one of my favorites of the year. I know this is, like I kind of said, you know, you're like, oh, it's 2 weeks in, but I think this is going to be my first favorite film of the year, and I can't wait to see what else gets to join this, but I'm happy I got to see this already.
The reviews, this is, we're recording on a Wednesday, and the reviews hit about an hour and a half ago for Split, and this film was screened way back in like November as well, and it's currently trending at like a 72% on Rotten Tomatoes. The AV Club has given it a thumbs up, so it's just not us nerds that are saying like, hey, this is a good film. There's actually some people that do this for a living, you know, that are highbrow critics that understand the indie filmmaking that M. Night was trying to do and the complexities of James McAvoy's character. And that's the thing, is I wonder if the general audience is going to appreciate what James McAvoy does to carry the film.
And I would question that as well, but hearing the reaction after our press screening, people were saying the same thing. People are like, oh man, I loved Hedwig, the, you know, the 9-year-old, or man, Patricia was kind of scary. You know, I definitely think people are going to grasp how interesting each character was. Maybe they won't get like the subtle nuances between subtle shifts, but I do think they're going to fall in love with all the different characters and kind of end up knowing names and personalities. And I think that will at least carry. Will they get every little thing that was thrown out there? No, but I'm glad there are some people who are seeing it.
I mean, I didn't get everything that was thrown at in that film.
No, and I don't think anyone does. But I think there's going to be people who pick up more than most.
But that's what's awesome about an M. Night Shyamalan film is that you can rewatch their films. You know, like you talked about rewatching 100%. The Sixth Sense. I've watched Unbreakable a million times because I love that film. I'm trying to think of the other ones. The Lady in the Water, I want to watch again, even because it's so hated. Let's go. I wonder if M. Night Shyamalan, what's his average rating on Rotten Tomatoes?
He has to be like in the middle. Like, he is such a 50-50 divisive director.
The Sixth Sense got 85% on that film from Rotten Tomatoes. And I feel like it probably should have got more because it was the first one to kind of do that kind of crazy stuff. I don't know how to look at it. Unbreakable got a 68% and then just got like bombed in the box office. And Signs got a 74%. People really love Signs, man.
I would switch that Signs Unbreakable rating. I liked both, but I do think Unbreakable was a far better film than Signs.
And then The Village was his first bomb at the 43%. But I enjoyed The Village.
I enjoyed the twist. I enjoyed, honestly, that was fine. I think it's one of his more ridiculous ones, but that's a compliment coming from me.
Yeah, and then Lady in the Water is where it really starts to tank, 24%, and then The Happening's 18%, and then Last Airbender is 6%. The Devil Returns at 52%, and then After Earth Bombs at 11%, and then The Visit 64%, and then The Split is holding at 72% right now. So he's kind of all over the board, but he still hasn't had like that amazing 95% film. But I really do appreciate that he tries.
Yeah, because I said in the beginning, not many people try to be as thought-provoking or pushing the boundaries as much as he does. He does so much that I have to respect for. Do I want to see him be in his movies with his little mini cameo? No. You know, there's things that he does in his things that are kind of his trademarks that I'm like, well, it's just another M. Night moment, but you know what? I respect that because he has a style, and there's some directors who have no style at all, that they just make movies, and it's, you know, when an M. Night movie's coming on.
What would be your signature film thing? Like, M. Night's always got a little sidebar character in there, because, I mean, sometimes you gotta just keep that budget down, but what would your sidebar thing?
Like, what would be my signature film thing?
Yeah.
Oh, sexualizing strong female leads. I love, like, showgirls. Like, that's my thing. I love these, like, feminine, strong characters. And so, yeah, that would be my thing, is, like, Buffy. That's why I love Josh Whedon. I think he writes female characters amazing. So that would be my little trademark.
Did you ever watch Chyna O'Brien?
No, I have not.
Chyna O'Brien, because I worked at a video store, was the... Cynthia Rothrock was the martial artist, but she was the Chuck Norris of the female ladies.
Oh, I am sold so hard on this.
And Chyna O'Brien was her go-to film. So Chyna O'Brien, big city policewoman, martial artist trainer, is forced to hand in her badge and head home to her father in the small town where she grew up. And guess what? Shit hits the fan, and Chyna O'Brien called in the action. It made a Chyna O'Brien 2. She even made like a Lady Dragon film. Like, she was like I said, she was the Chuck Norris of the ladies back there in the late 80s.
I like that. I have to look more into that. But like I said, I love a signature. I think Tarantino has a lot of his. I even think like guys like Zack Snyder has his. But then there's some that like Michael Bay, what is he known for? Explosions? You know, that's a signature. But is it a fun signature?
No. His signature is the wraparound shot.
Bad Boys
does it. It's so amazing where it starts up high and then just wraps all the way around and then comes to like face to face. Like, we got to get him. Like, I love that wraparound shot. It's the best ever.
But yeah, like, yeah, God, I can't believe, because that even happens in Transformers at one point, and it's like big wraparound with Megan Fox and Shia LaBeouf. Yeah, God, I didn't even realize how much that happened.
Oh, man. Yeah. And then J.J. Abrams has a lens flare. I'm trying to, what else are there? Signature director moves. We should Google this.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting. I think that, like, we've been kind of complimenting M. Night for that, and he does have some signatures that I think, like the plot twist or these kind of awkward humors. I love that. I want to see more directors shine like he does.
I just want to see more people just be creative. I mean, like, that's the thing is we keep talking about, oh, Wes Anderson totally has a style.
Oh, well, yeah, Wes, like, everything about his movies are his style. Right. So that's what's interesting. His is a fully engrossing thing.
Michael Mann, he has that grittiness, too. Like, you know when you're watching a Michael Mann film.
I think what I really, really respect about M. Night, and this kind of ties it all together, is I don't think he cares what other people think. And I think I respect that a lot, because I think that's a thing I like about Zack Snyder is people bash them and they're like, okay, I'm still going to do what I want. And I, as an artist, I'm like, please do. I need more of these guys that are just like, look, people keep paying me. I'm going to keep doing what I do and do it. And like, there's so many people who are like, oh, well, the critics didn't love it. I'm going to change it. Nah, M. Night's like, I'm still doing this.
And he's young too. What is he, like 46? So, I mean, he's got more films in the tank and he's got tons of stuff.
I think he's going to be around. I think especially now that The Visit did well and now Split's hopefully going to do well. I really think he's going to have a great, I don't want to say second half of his career, but maybe, you know, the end of the first act of his career.
And Shyamalan wants to direct Stranger Things.
I think he would fit into that universe amazingly well. I would really like to see him there.
When we were talking about stylistic choices for directors, how did we forget your boy Tim Burton?
Man, Tim Burton's interesting because I feel like he's lost his stylistic points now.
Well, no, his ex-wife is always in his film. Like, that's his...
Well, yeah. Well, same thing with Rob Zombie has that, where Sherry Moon Zombie has to be in all of them, and he keeps making the same 70s like horror film over and over again. Yeah, I appreciate this because there's a lot of directors that are kind of just... Like, Ridley Scott is an amazing director, but what's his signature? Or what makes his movies that unique thing? So I do appreciate people who at least have some kind of gimmick to them.
Yeah, like a Guillermo del Toro. Like, you know that you're watching his film, like, as soon as it starts. Like, oh, man, he loves those little creatures. Oh, so good. I love talking about film at, like, this level, where you're just like, hey, let's put all their stuff together and let's just kind of analyze it. But you'll be watching, like, a director, and this is where it sometimes ruins me for directors, because then I'll be like, oh, well, they kind of do this thing, and it'll show up there and there. And, like, sometimes it'll take me out of the moment. But going back to this film, Split, and the opening credit scene, there was something trippy about it that just said, hey, this is going to be a sociopath, psychological craziness that you're going to enjoy. And I did. And I'm trying to think about what it was, because it was, I wonder if the panels did split into 24 panels. I mean, I didn't count it.
It was funny because that happens at the end credits for sure. That was exactly what the end credits was, because there was a lot of like 24 different like things. I definitely think that was the beginning. And I will say I didn't realize how much that intro really does kind of set you up for that. That those start credits really do introduce you to the world very nicely. And yeah, I can't believe I didn't notice how much those credits do play a factor into this movie.
Well, that's kind of my thing now, is like with font and checking them out, because with Civil War, I was enamored with what they were doing as they were transitioning from different areas here and there. And you're like,
that was my favorite thing about that movie. I thought that was so loud and like out there that I was just like, that's a really artistic move there, Russo Brothers. Okay. And then it still is a Marvel movie, but no, I adore that. So yeah, I'm starting to notice, I think you're helping me notice these like font choices and like these kind of intro credit stuff and end credit things as well.
Yeah, because now we're with Marvel, and I don't know if DC does it, but like just the post-credit scenes now, you're just like, oh, the whole movie experience doesn't end when the credits end. Like, it still continues, and there's going to be like little Easter eggs here and there and just artistic choices. And just, I love that the cinematic experience is kind of extended now, and it just isn't over once the movie ends. Like, there's just all these other possibilities that can happen.
And that's like what I said about this movie as well, is it ends, but there's still so much more to it. And that's all I can ask for, is I'm just so tired of seeing a movie and then I see it and then it's kind of out of my brain and it's done. This I'm going to think about for a while. And I can't wait to just kind of see how other people are going to talk about it and maybe jump into split conversations later on as well.
like you said, right after the film, this makes me want to see more, like, right away. Like, I was like, oh, I want to see another film right away about what's going on. And, like, I want to see this universe expand. And I'm so excited. If I'm hoping, everybody, please just go see the movie. Just go give them money so I can get a sequel to this. Like, please, just please, 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 please give money to this film so I can get a sequel. Because I'm not that old. I'm not that young anymore. So I don't know how long I can wait for a sequel to this film.
Especially how long between this and Unbreakable.
No, you spoiled it, bastard.
No, you saw it already. You don't have to yell at me about spoiling this movie anymore.
Oh, man, I can't believe you spoiled it for me. I would have shit my pants at the end of the film if it wasn't spoiled for me.
But I do think your viewing experience was different from me telling you that there was a connection between this and Unbreakable, because I felt like you were looking for things. And like you said, there was that conference call that you were like, oh, okay, what's happening? But what can I take from this? How much information is going to be thrown out? So I think your viewing experience was changed. But I don't want to say it's ruined, because I think you went into this with a whole different atmosphere now. And I like that you got to kind of go into this that way.
No, you are correct. You didn't ruin it for me. But again, I there's only a few moments in time where you can get Luke, I'm your father.
Yes.
And this would have been one of those moments for me if I didn't know going in that, like, there was a connection. And at the end, I'm like, oh, my God. Like, I would have, like, again, I know nobody wants to see me shit my pants. But if I didn't know that these were connected and at the end Bruce Willis shows up and they talk about Mr. Glass, I would have gone apeshit, because Unbreakable is one of my favorite films on the nerd side. And I was so excited that they're connected. But like you did said, once I knew that they were connected, I started analyzing every frame of that film, looking for more connections, looking for how the universe is going to expand, looking for every little note here and there. I was like, okay, when they talked about Baltimore, when they went outside, I looked at every street sign, every road sign, like, and see where the point of references were, where they were walking around and what possibly could be influencing that universe and expanding the universe, and what are possibilities of things. Because M. Night Shyamalan loves those details. Like, that girl's office, I just need a still shot of it so I can just pan through and just look at everything in that office to see what was going on. Like, all those different files, all those different things that were going on, because he has this way of putting amazing details all over the place. And that's why you need to rewatch his films a couple times, because he puts a lot of effort into it.
No, this has instant rewatch quality, and I definitely can't wait to see it again and kind of see what else I can grab. And I will say, for anyone still listening, with the connection to Unbreakable, this isn't like a direct sequel. This is more of like Cloverfield to 10 Cloverfield Lane, where they're in the same universe, but you don't have to see one to get the other. So I definitely appreciate that he did that and kind of just didn't alienize any of the viewers and being like, look, if you've seen it, you've seen it. If not, it's whatever. And I appreciate that.
Final thoughts?
I love it, man. I don't want to say it's a 5 out of 5 piece, but I think in my review, I think I'm going to put it at a 4 out of 5. I love this. Like, really, really fun. You know, it has its flaws in it, but I think I can ignore any of the flaws, like some of the lack of tension or some of the narrative getting kind of cluttered a little bit with some of the main characters. But other than that, I there's so much love about it.
I said it's a good film, not a great film. Because a great film, that's like 9 out of 10, you know, but a 4 out of 5, an 8 out of 10, that's in the average realm. Like, and there's enough in it with James McAvoy to kind of give it that little push north of an 8 a little bit more. Cause like, you just need to go see it for James McAvoy. Like, you could, whatever goes on in the film, you could just like, you know what? I just want to go see this film for James McAvoy, and you'll enjoy yourself. Like, a cinematic experience. Just go see what he does in that film, and that's what pushes it up past that 8 mark. But I think an 8, like a 4 out of 5 or an 8 out of 10 is a solid place to be. I can see where people would cut it down from there. Like we said, there are flaws, and some people hate Zack Snyder to hate Zack Snyder. Some people hate M. Night Shyamalan just to hate M. Night Shyamalan, and you're not going to be able to change those people. But what James McAvoy did last night on the screen for me was amazing.
Yeah, his performance is 2 stars alone. That if there was nothing else good about the movie, he would have gave me 2 stars. But there's a good movie around it. Good filmmaking, good cinematography, okay script. I don't want to say it's flawless. Some of the dialogue's a little cheesy, but M. Night's not a huge dialogue person. So no, everything that happened, I'm glad it happened, and I'm excited for more. I really want more of the Split / Unbreakable universe.
Hi, EJ. I'll talk to you next week.
You too, my friend.
I'm very excited for this next interview. Rapper, musician, writer, filmmaker, actor, Ice Cube was in Tampa this past week for a press junket regarding his latest film, Fist Fight, and movie critic Dewey Singleton and I got to speak with him.
One of the biggest travesties last year, in my opinion, was how your film, Straight Outta Compton, got neglected. I'm part of 2 voting guilds myself. I'm part of Southeastern Film Critics Association and Online Film Critics Society, and I championed you guys. I was telling them to vote for you guys, and it just didn't work out for whatever reason. This year, do you think that the voters in general are going to be a bit more open-minded? Because we've got some great films on tap. Moonlight, Fences, Hidden Figures, etc. What are your thoughts?
You never know with these things. I know the Academy is trying to diversify is the word. And we'll see, whether the films get awards or not, that doesn't take away from the fact that they're great films by great directors and actors, and people enjoy them. And, awards, after that night, you put it on the shelf and everybody forgets about it. But it's really all about the people. And if you give me an award in your heart, then I earned it.
Well, that movie, Straight Outta Compton, there's film, in my opinion, and then there's art. And I thought that was art last year, in my opinion, as a film critic. And I just thought you guys didn't get what you deserved. And that's why I was a champion for you guys last year. And that's why I wanted to just ask you briefly about that. Now, this is just a personal question. How often do you friends of friends come up to you and say, I got something I want you to hear? I got some music I want you to hear. How often does that happen to you?
Probably, once a week, about once a week, you got people who, I got a cousin that rap, I got somebody that, needs you to see a script or something, and it's just, I used to be that same guy, so I always take it and check it out, and, if it's something, if it's talent there, we'll work with it. If not, then we'll say, hey, man, go back to the drawing board.
Is it because of your background, do you want to go towards helping those people out who are trying to make it big?
Yeah, I think, talent always needs a boost. And it always needs somebody that's already in position to recognize that talent to bring them along. So I think anybody who's in the entertainment business should be looking for young talent to bring along in some way.
Absolutely. Now, let's get on to Fist Fight. And by the way, I laughed my butt off. It's such a great movie. Cool. Everybody's going to love it when it comes out. One thing I've noticed is that when you're in a film, basically these films lend itself towards improvisational comedy. There's a lot of improv going on. Mm. Richie Keene from Always Sunny in Philadelphia, there's improv abound there. And I noticed that in this film, just like some of your previous films, you've got with 21 Jump Street, you've got that scene where the Korean Jesus line, which it seems it's like improv, it's hysterical. In this film, you've got some areas where there could be some improv going on. I gotta ask you about the tennis racket scene.
Yeah.
I mean, was that improv or was that a completely staged fight?
No, that was staged right there. They definitely set that shot up. The fighting was real great because it was choreographed all the way through. It was
the whole thing.
The whole thing was choreographed all the way through. So,
what attracted you to this? Was it Charlie Day? Was it the director?
It was Charlie Day. I wanted to work with him. I wanted him to be in Ride Along too, but it didn't work out. So, I just knew when me and him got on the screen that the chemistry would be perfect. And
it's palatable. It's amazing. I can't wait for people to see this film. And lastly, Tracy Morgan.
Yes.
I mean, he just gets off these liners left and right. I mean, he's just, sometimes when you're in a scene with him, you just got to back away and let him be Tracy.
Without a doubt. You know he's there to take care of the scene. He's the ultimate cleanup man because
he knocks out of the park every time.
Every time, so You know, you leave the button for Tracy. You know, you just know no matter what, Tracy has a home run that he's sitting on, and it's always different. He always shoots something different. So, you know, that's what's great is that you have so much variety.
And then what people may not notice or may not see is that there's another cleanup hitter in this movie, and this is where I'm going to head up here.
Yes.
Jillian Bell.
Yes.
Jillian Bell.
Jillian.
Oh, my Lord. This is another film where you're with Jillian, and she kills it in this film, doesn't she?
And she's the best, man. She's, you know, one of the funniest, you know, actresses out there who can steal a scene without even trying. And it's just uncanny. It's great. And I'm glad she's in our movie.
LaMarne Morris, in an interview, called you the ultimate comedic straight man. Where does this skill come from?
I always had funny friends, you know, and I guess, you know, having funny friends, you know, sometimes they go overboard and you have to pull them back. So I'm kind of used to being the guy to say, all right, enough's enough. So I just think I've been the straight guy my whole life, you know.
You've worked with some of the biggest names in comedy. How does Charlie Day stack up?
Oh, right up there, you know, at the top. You know, I love Charlie's style and his performances, you know, in all his movies. You know, he has a niche and he plays it to the hilt, and you know, I think he's funny and he's great, and he's you know, he does some nuanced things in this movie that shows his chops and that he's, you know, one of the funniest guys out there.
Since you are the toughest person to make laugh, Kevin Hart versus Charlie Day, who makes you laugh first?
It's probably Kevin Hart. You know, Charlie. You know, Charlie's a, you know, he's a funny dude, but he's a serious dude. But Kevin's a clown. You know, Kevin is just all over the place. So I'd say Kevin can break me first.
Friday is one of the funniest movies, hands down, of our generation. What's the biggest difference between making somebody laugh today compared to then?
No difference. You know, it's always a task, and you always have to search for that funny bone. I think it's the universal themes that are never said sometimes are the funniest. You know, it's things that we all go through, but we don't really talk to each other about. But when you see them up on the screen, they make you laugh. So it's really finding those moments that we all kind of have in common that we don't even know yet.
You've been in acting for 20 plus years now. How have you evolved to at this point right now?
Well, I mean, I know what I do best. You know, I'm not trying to play every kind of part there is. You know, I do what I do and find the movies that, you know I can be great at. And, you know, I think when you first start acting, you want to play anything. You'll play chicken dinner if, you know what I'm saying, if it's the right role. So, you know, now, you know, I just want to play roles that I know I can kill it.
Friday has a cartoon series or had a cartoon series. Do you think Friday would work as a sitcom on Netflix?
You know, I don't know. That cartoon series was a disaster. So, you know, you never really know. You know, I know these characters, people love them. They would love to see them. But to be able to pull off, you know, that quality of comedy week in and week out, it might be tough.
And after the past election, we're kind of really divided right now. If you were president, how would you bring us back together?
You know, I don't know. Make gas free, I don't know. You know, make something free. You know, I think that would bring us together, you know. I'd make it where we didn't have to pay one of the bills that we all pay. So maybe that water bill, the gas bill. Somehow I figure out how we can do it. The government can give it for free.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time.
All right. Take it easy.
That was Ice Cube in his next film, Fist Fight, starring Charlie Day, Tracy Morgan, Jillian Bell, and Christina Hendricks, comes out February 17th, 2017. Goonies legend Sean Astin called the Monkeys Fighting Robots hotline in December to discuss his latest project, Unlock the World of Games Revealed, which is available right now on iTunes and Amazon. It's a documentary about the world of video games. And let us just jump right into that conversation. Hey, Sean, thank you for taking the time to talk with me today.
It's great to be back in Tampa.
Your new documentary series, Unlock the World of Games Revealed, is available today on video on demand. What attracted you to the project?
I met the documentary filmmaker a few years ago. Gosh, it was maybe even 4 years ago now. And he was doing a movie, a documentary movie. And he wanted to interview me about it. And we sat down just talking video games, talking Donkey Kong and talking, you know, in television and some of the other games that I used to play growing up. And I fell in love with the subject matter, and I fell in love with this guy's passion for a subject. So he finished the movie. It had some great actors in it. It had some great people. He interviewed everybody who was anybody in the video game world. And then he was like, I can't believe I had to cut down 4 years of research into 90 minutes. And so he was, you know, 4 years of you know, thousands of hours of stuff. So he said, let's do a video game movie. So I jumped on to executive produce it. And the premise was, it's like, how are you going to show the world video games? And he's like, let's get actors that everybody knows, and we'll give them each, like, an area to go to. Like Zelda Williams, Robin Williams' daughter, they go, we're going to send you to the Children's Hospital. Because Children's Hospital uses video games as a part of their pain management. You know, with like cancer kids who are on, you know, really rough medications, and they're using pain meds and stuff. And they're like, it is as effective, maybe not as effective, but it is a incredible tool. So you get to see her interact with some kids and talk to the hospital people and learn about it from that side. They take like Michael Rooker, who's a great actor, and he actually does motion capture stuff where they put on the suits with the little dots all over them, and then they act out the part and the video game character. They're basically like a puppet driving the video game character. So you go and you see all about how motion capture, how the computers work, how what the performances are like, and how it looks when it comes out. So, you know, with me, I went to a couple of schools that offer video game design. You can get a master's degree, you can get an undergrad, or you can get a master's degree in video game design. It's like a multi-billion-dollar a year business now, and most people don't know anything about it. So we have 8 episodes. It's a couple of actors that people recognize in each episode: Penn Jillette, Bill Shatner. You know, and there's even some internet wonder sensations in there, like Allison Hayslip and Megan Camarena, and Matt Walsh is in there from Veep. And so we basically are saying, like, this subject matter is interesting in and of its own merits, but we're designing it to make it easy for people who wouldn't normally look at this kind of documentary. And we're like, hey, look, here's people you know, and look how they're checking out the documentary.
Hi, let's do some rapid fire really quick because I only have a few minutes. You were a child of the 80s. What games hooked you as a kid?
Well, Donkey Kong was pretty massive. I would say my favorite was Dragon's Lair, which was like one of the early kind of, I don't know if it was 3D, but it was like fully rich animation, and I love that.
And last year you were in Woodlawn, this year Unlock, next year Stranger Things. How are you picking your projects?
They pick me, honestly. They pick me. I can go about my life doing my running and being with my kids. And, you know, I did like a triathlon last year in Kona, Hawaii. And like, I do all these things. And the next thing you know, somebody calls and they're like, hey, do you want to be on Stranger Things? I'm like, yeah, I'd love to do that. So I'm lucky that I've been around long enough that people know who I am. They generally know before I get there, whether or not I'm anywhere close to what they like. And sometimes there's a fit. So I'm pretty lucky.
Is there an update on the sequel to Goonies?
There is no update, except that to say that Richard Donner, I know, is absolutely determined to get it made. And I know Steven Spielberg likes it, and I know they've developed a lot of different screenplays, and someday you got to imagine it's going to happen, but I have no actual...
What would you put the percentage at?
My thing now is I think they'll just reboot it from scratch, and I would put that at like 80%, but that's based on absolutely nothing.
Stranger Things Season 2 is in production right now. How are things going at the Radio Shack?
I can't say. It's so cool to be invited to be a part of something that is now absolutely in the center of everyone's attention. And it is such a great show. It's getting the critical recognition that it deserves with the Golden Globes and SAG Awards and stuff. So for me, my character, as they promote it, as they published, is a manager of a Radio Shack. And next question.
Does Bob Newby live longer than Jim Kent of The Strain?
Does Bob? Okay, so Kent Jim Kent lasted 8 episodes, which was longer than the book that it was based on. So I thought that was pretty good. So we're going to try and make sure I last longer than the book, even though it wasn't based on a book and there's no character. But you know what I'm saying. I personally have no idea if I live or die. And I'm kind of happy for that. I get a script and I look at it and I'm like, yay, I made it. Or maybe I didn't. I'm not supposed to say anything.
The last bullet point of your bio states, has the power to make you an honorary Goonie. Does a person need to earn that, or is that more of a request?
They just need to, it's like, you know, if you see a turtle, does a turtle need to earn being a turtle? No, it's a turtle. You know what I mean? Are you a Goonie?
Yes, I am.
Wow, that was a long hesitation. I'll ask you again. Are you a Goonie?
Yes, I am.
That was the same amount of time. Unfortunately, you're going to have to come back in 6 months and request it. No, all right, raise your right hand and repeat after me.
Yes, sir.
I. State your name.
Matthew Sardo.
Do solemnly swear. To abide the Goondock faith.
To abide by the Goondock faith.
Yeah. Now that is, congratulations, you're a Goonie. Now that's the you know, at someone's bedside as they're dying length. There's actually a much longer formal one, but we'll let this suffice for now. You're provisionally a Goonie, and assuming you don't do anything lame over the next 50 years of your life, that'll lock in.
Sean, thank you for your time, and best of luck with all your future projects.
Thanks, man. Everybody can find Unlocked, the World of Video Games Revealed, on any – it dropped today. I love saying it dropped. It makes me feel like I'm so hip. On all of the – on Amazon, on iTunes, on Google Play, on anywhere where you can buy stuff. So we're putting it out independently, so we're kind of counting on everybody to jump in and grab it.
I'll hit social media, and we'll get it out there for you. Thank you.
Thanks, brother.
That was Sean Astin in his new documentary, Unlock, the World of Games Revealed. Is available now on video on demand, iTunes, and Amazon.
Hey, Matt, we survived another episode. Oh, no!
Once again, there are several ways to continue the conversation after the show. Follow us on Twitter at monkeys_robots. You can look at all our silly photos on Instagram at monkeysfightingrobots. You can follow me on Twitter at Matthew Sardo. My co-host EJ is also on Twitter at EJ Christ with a K. The biggest compliment we receive is when the subscriber number goes up on Blog Talk Radio, our new home. Check it out. If you have a chance, we'd greatly appreciate a review of our show on iTunes. The best way to listen to the show is on our website, monkeysfightingrobots.com.
Okay, Lunchbox, let's try this again.
There are so many people that made the 107th episode of Monkeys Fighting Robots a success. Special shout out to my co-host EJ Marino for putting up with me. Special thanks to Ice Cube for setting up the press junket at Warner Brothers, and Sean Astin for calling in. Jeff Shade is the creator of our amazing intros and outros. Jessica Wynn designed the Monkeys Fighting Robots logo. Are you a monkey or are you a robot? The staff at Visual Realm built our website and keeps us up and running. To all my friends, family, and the interweb, thank you very much for your support. I'm Matt Sardo, and this is Monkeys Fighting Robots.